Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
This episode is brought to you by our Patreon supporters. Become a patron today at patreon.com/intotheportal.
Hello, and welcome back into the portal. I'm Amber Ray.
And I'm Andrew McKay.
And we're back with our summer vault series.
Hey? Yeah, that's right. And holy moly, does it feel like it's been a long ass time since we've been on the mic.
It does feel like it's been a long time. Well, at the same time, though, I'm going to say that this month has flown. Can't believe it's 25th today.
Seriously. It's your birthday tomorrow.
It is my birthday.
That's crazy.
Woohoo. It's crazy. Like it's so funny. We're so crazy busy with work and everything. We didn't even introduce the series last week when we decided that we were going to dig into our Patreon archives for you guys and re-release some old goodies.
Yeah. So basically what we have for you, starting with the last release with the Orang Pandek, is a summer vault series. Yeah. And we're super excited about it because we didn't really know what we were going to do with a lot of our Patreon episodes, the early ones that we released, and they were kind of just sitting there, and our patrons had enjoyed them, and we thought you guys might too. So, yeah, pretty stoked on it.
Yeah, not to mention it's given us some more time to work on our September episodes.
So. Yeah,
yay!
And that's another thing. That's another reason we wanted to do this little bit before we get into Lord Lucan is just to let you guys know that we are not slowing down. It's been a bit of a slow summer for ITP because of work and life. But we really appreciate your support and you guys continuing to listen to the show. And we have, lots of big things coming. We have I think 5 episodes in the works right now that are being worked on. Research is happening and they're all really cool. So lots of stuff to come.
Mm-hmm. Lots coming down the pipe.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what we're going to get into in this archive episode.
This was a really fun one because it was really different for us, going into more of a true crime kind of an episode / mystery,
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely a whodunit for sure.
In a way. I mean, yeah, for us it was. For the rest of the media world, it was pretty much a closed case,
yeah,
in a lot of ways. But there's a lot of loose ends that weren't talked about that obviously we get into in this episode, which are pretty fascinating ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some pretty colorful characters and and just very confusing stories
that's
from
for sure
some people. Yeah. So it's a really fascinating case and it really hasn't gotten the attention it deserves, I think. So I'm glad we decided to cover this and we did it, Patreon exclusive. And now you guys are all going to get to hear a little bit about this. It was a fun little mini-sode, right?
A classic mini-sode, a tale of mystery and deception.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the most, definitely one of its kind for Into the Portal. So, this guy was infamous.
Very, very. Well, without further ado, indeed.
Let's get into it.
The legend of Lord Lucan is a dark, mysterious tale. It begins with lavish opulences of wealth and antiquated titles of aristocracy. The young lord grew up in an era plagued by World War II, from which he emerged unscathed as a boy, sent away to relatives in North America for safety. It was from these sheltered origins that the enigmatic, notorious playboy would emerge, showered in excesses and prone to indulgences beyond his means. Indeed, a classic tale of mystery and deception, and perhaps the perfect setup. Join us on Into the Portal for an all-too-real modern tale of suspense that has lasted more than 45 years, as we discuss one of the most notorious vanished persons in history, the mystery of Lord Lucan.
Hello and welcome back into the portal. I'm Amber Ray.
And I'm Andrew McKay.
And we're back with a brand new Patreon mini-sode.
Yeah, what's up, everybody?
November.
We got some newbies this month.
Right? We do.
So, yeah, welcome into the Patreon community. We are so stoked to have you here. And we're looking forward to bringing you guys just amazing content into Patreon over the next little while. So,
Lots of fun stuff. Yep. So, today we're actually getting into a little bit of a different tale. It is a mystery, one of a little bit more of a human nature.
Yeah.
So, we're actually going to get into a bit of a whodunit mystery murder. Murder mystery. I got that mixed up. Mystery murder. I don't know.
Mystery murder. That sounds like a... I don't even know. That's funny, though. Anyway, yeah. So who are we talking about today, Amber?
We're talking about none other than the dubious Lord Lucan.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So some of you may have heard of this guy, but I definitely hadn't until, it sort of came up in one of the strange books that we have in our library here with mysteries and things.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we're going to give his, it's a good story.
It's a whodunit murder, but it's also, he has become the most notorious missing person ever.
Pretty much.
Which is in modern times.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so here we go. The Legend of Lord Lucan, it's murky, muddled. There's the background can be vague in certain parts, but essentially he came from wealthy aristocracy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Richard John Bingham, he was the 7th Earl of Lucan, most commonly known as Lord Lucan, like we said. So he was a part of the Anglo-Irish aristocracy, and he was the eldest son of George Charles Patrick Bingham, who was, the 6th Earl of Lucan. this guy was an Irish peer, a British soldier, and a very gritty labor politician, his father.
Mm-hmm.
So his early life was, pretty straightforward for what you would expect from a gentleman in this type of position in life. He was born on the 18th of December, 1934, and he was raised in Marylebone, London. And he was raised in a relatively healthy manner, like super privileged, obviously. We don't really know, obviously, the relationship was what it was like between him and his father.
I'm picturing lots of polo mattresses, lots of opulent fabrics.
But of course, we know all too well from fiction and reality that those types of households don't always bring up the happiest people.
Not the most functional.
Anyway, in 1939, him and his sister Jane were evacuated to Wales because of the dangers of the Second World War. We were becoming a little bit precarious in London. And the following year, they were joined by their two other siblings, Sally and Hugh. And at this point, there's a little bit of a Canadian connection because the Lucan children were moved to Toronto to escape the war as well. And then later on to New York, where they actually had family friends. They ended up spending 5 years with a family acquaintance of the Lucans in there. There was their godmother. There was Lord Lucan's godmother specifically. Do we have a name for her here? I can't remember. I think it comes up in a second. But anyway, they're in the United States and young Lord Lucan... Lucky guy, studying at the Harvey Preparatory School just outside New York, one of the most prestigious in the country. And he was spending most of his summers kind of chilling in the Adirondack Mountains, summer camps.
Well, definitely sounds like he was living it up.
Yeah.
And even though we're in a state of war, doesn't sound like he was too aware of it.
No, not at this time. Of course, the war ends and he would later on return to Europe and follow in his father's footsteps, whether he wanted to or not, we don't really know. But he joined the Coldstream Guards, which is the oldest regiment in the British Army.
Okay, wait. So he was born in 1934. So he would have been 10 years old in 1944. So he would have been way too young to actually participate in the war itself.
Yeah.
But sorry, he ended up joining in anyway?
Yeah, no, this is after the war. So he would have been a teenager, I suppose, at this point, right? And he served time in West Germany from 1953 to 55. Years of service, I guess. I don't know if it was mandatory. It must have been mandatory.
I wonder.
Right? Yeah. Anyway, he was discharged and would end up joining a merchant bank, something that was a typical occupation for people in aristocracy. And relatively modest salary, though, £500 a year. But, of course, which is only about 10 grand, like, not a lot. But, of course, you have commissions and different things like that. Plus, he was a trust fund kid. So lots of cash for the Lucans, for sure. Yeah, various family trusts and things like that. So, at this point... We've got the picture of Lord Lucan, his background, his upbringing, and this is where things start to kind of shift.
I feel like you kind of teed him up to be like this, like super like richy rich kind of character where he's just living in his fantasy rich world and doesn't really have to participate in society too much. Like, you right. know, like he does his penance time, like, you know, serving in like a very, obviously he's in West Berlin or West Germany?
Doesn't actually say.
Oh, no, it says West Germany, so he would have been relatively safe. If you're in West Berlin, then you're a little bit more of a sticky situation because you're right behind the wall.
Yeah, wouldn't be any Western on the east side?
Of course, yeah, because Berlin was actually in the Soviet territory. So there was, like, the Berlin Wall.
Right.
But there was, so the Berlin Wall separated the city, but the actual Berlin was in
East Germany. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry.
So
yeah, yeah.
they had to, right. yeah, so yeah. it was kind of a sticky situation, right. but he wasn't in that. He was very safe, very cushy is all I'm trying to say.
Right.
Like, this guy just, for all you listening in, like, he's just, yeah, like a little poofy pants is what I'm imagining. And by all accounts, he, into his adult years, into his later life, he always liked to indulge, right? And he was very much about himself, not mm-hmm. really about anyone else. And we'll see that right now. Because, like you said, things are going to get interesting. So essentially, yeah, Richard, soon to be the 7th Earl, so he hadn't actually inherited that title yet.
Right.
But he was, like I said, very prone to enjoying his position in life and just had a lot of hobbies, a lot of expensive things.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those expensive things was his wife. So Veronica Duncan, they met in early 1963 and they were engaged shortly after. They basically got married and it was the same year they met, they got married.
That's a quick turnaround.
Yeah. Yeah. So very, very quick turnaround. She obviously saw she saw the wealth. That was probably all she saw. Like, I don't really know too much about her other than the fact that she gets really effing weird in her
She's weird
later
right
lives.
From Jump Street, too.
Well, I guess. Yeah, you have, like, to, you have to wonder what her motives are, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, essentially, this was, like, basically at the same time his dad died. So, he inherits this title. He inherits all this wealth, all these different, like, yeah, titles and fortunes and everything else. Mm-hmm. It was about, okay, in today's terms, it would have been about $7 million he inherited.
In cash.
In cash. And then he also has estates and trusts. So he has a lot to play with.
Yeah.
And so this is where we kind of get into another sort of angle of Lord Lucan, because he was a notorious gambler. And he spent a lot of time at this one particular club called the Claremont Club.
Yeah.
Which was essentially where anyone who was anyone was there to gamble. And he met a lot of people, including the people... Oh, what's his name? The guy that wrote 007?
Oh, my God. Fleming.
Ian Fleming. He met Ian Fleming there, who also liked to frequent that same location.
That's right.
And same with
Peter Sellers.
That was the other guy.
Yeah,
I was trying
so
to think
of course, Pink Panther.
So essentially, yeah, he gets into this sort of culture of gambling quite extensively. Gets the name Lucky Lucan. That's how much of a regular he was there.
That's right, yeah.
And he mostly focused on backgammon and bridge, which does take skill. It's not like he's just, like, throwing dice like craps and, you know, whatever. Interestingly, this Claremont Club was pretty close to another building that we've covered in London.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, it was actually originally located at 44 Berkeley Square.
Just down the way from, what was the number again? 50, right?
Berkeley.
Oh, so that's so close. That's
it's
so
really,
crazy, right?
Really close. So I haven't actually, like, Google mapped it to see how close, but I'm imagining it's, like, yeah, just a couple blocks.
And just to kind of, an idea of this Claremont Club. So, yeah, it's in essentially a mansion. It's not like a...
It's like a big opulent building.
Yeah, but it's like a house that's been retrofitted to a club, right? So you've got, like, the bar on the second floor and, like, the games on the massive downstairs. And, of course, you've got these, you know, vaulted ceilings with all the crown moldings and everything. And you can just imagine, right?
Well, just even if you think about it, right, like, the opulence that went into old world style of houses in London and stuff, like, you know, around that time, it would have been... Exactly that. It wouldn't be anything like we would imagine today, like a modern home.
Like
converted.
Or like a casino is like what I'm thinking,
oh,
right? Like,
oh,
I'm thinking
the
gambling club.
What I'm picturing in my head is just like the quintessential, like, high-end clubs that you see in like a James Bond movie.
Absolutely.
It's not like there's like It's not like Vegas. But anyways, yeah, so he was a member of this club. He was there basically every day, like I said. And interestingly, this club was still in existence up until this year. It actually closed 2018, March.
Yeah. Crazy, right?
Yeah. And so anyways, we've got this funny dynamic, right? Because Lord Lucan has just inherited a ton of money, wealth, titles, all of that. He has a nice new bit of arm candy in Veronica.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also straying away from her because he's got this gambling addiction.
Yeah.
It is a full-on addiction. You can't tell me it's not. He's literally there, like, every chance he gets, every day, every night. And so, obviously, Veronica starts to get a little bit peeved about this.
Mm.
Initially, she tried to, you know, join him and tried to get some skills. She wanted to play backgammon and bridge, but she didn't enjoy them to the same extent as Lucan. And so she ended up just getting a little bit... Mm. And then, of course, he's got his other, he's got golf, he's got hunting, he's got all these other, whatever, like, expensive interests, buying yachts and all this stuff, and she's just kind of left in the dust.
Hmm.
But they do start to pop out a couple of kids, too, at this point. I believe there was two total. Okay. But essentially, yeah, he's making all these connections. Ian Fleming, like we said, he actually had an interview to, or not an interview, what would you call it? Like a screening?
A
casting call, yeah. He was gonna maybe potentially play James Bond in the first ever James Bond, but just didn't happen for him.
He had the looks and the vibe, but it just didn't quite work out.
The looks, though? He's kind of a weirdo.
That's what people at the time said about him, anyway. I mean, I don't know, I wouldn't know, but he didn't get the part. I think he was pretty sour about that. There's a photo of him doing the classic, like, spin around from the intro to the James Bond when he shoots through the, you know, the portal and then the blood comes down and all that. It's kind of a funny photo. We can put that up on our website for you guys. But, I don't even know. Like, do you think that this has anything to do with how things kind of play out? Just like things that have happened so far. Do you think that he's unstable at this point? Clearly.
I think he is.
Well, you think he's got a full-blown gambling addiction. Because that's the thing. Like, yeah. I mean, I guess when you're hanging around with characters like Peter Sellers, you can't exactly be in the best state of mind.
No.
I suppose. Yeah.
Exactly. We teed it all up, right? Like, he's got this very rich, opulent background. Kind of just a Richie Rich character. Goes about his life just in a fantasy world, essentially. Like, you know, it's just this... The whirlwind sort of... lifestyle of the rich.
Right.
And famous. And he was definitely increasingly notorious, especially in that local scene, but beyond as well. So now we're kind of getting to the crux of the mystery here.
Yeah, do you want to give this part?
Well, this is... Okay.
All right.
So on November 7th, 1974, Nanny Sandra Eleanor Rivett of the Lucan household. Mm-hmm. At this time, Lord Lucan was actually separated from Veronica, living in a private residence, and then she had custody of the two kids.
Yes.
So, essentially, the one night here, November 7th, Sandra Eleanor Rivett was still in the household when normally she would have had the night off. Supposedly, she had a boyfriend, and he wasn't able to meet her that evening, so they rearranged to meet the next. So, she switched her night off, and it was a very fatal error.
Indeed.
Essentially, so she put the kids to bed and descended down towards the kitchen and was bludgeoned over the head as she entered the kitchen door.
Right.
And essentially how, okay, this is where it starts to get really muddled because it's a he said, she said situation. So essentially, Sandra's dead. She got bludgeoned over the head. And then we get Lady Lucan supposedly entering and seeing, well, actually no, like she came down, she noticed that Sandra, because Sandra was, the premise of her going down to the kitchen was to get some tea for Lady Lucan.
Yes.
And when she didn't arrive, like, you know, like 10-15 minutes pass, she goes down to the kitchen herself, and allegedly the attacker was waiting for her. And he came up from behind, so she goes through the door, and he grabs her from behind, and there's this vicious struggle that ensues.
Right.
And essentially, at one point, Lady Lucan stated that her attacker told her to shut up, and she says later on that she did recognize the voice as that of her husband, Lord Lucan. Okay, so...
But, okay.
So essentially what happens is the struggle ensues, then this is where things start to get weird. So apparently, this is a direct quote from, this is just from Wikipedia, just a quick reference.
Yeah.
But it says here that the two apparently, this quote, the two apparently continued to fight. She bit his fingers, and when he threw her face down to the carpet, she managed to turn around and squeeze his testicles, causing him to release the grip on her throat and give up the fight. When she asked where Rivet was, the nanny, Lucan was at first evasive. So at this point, he's given up the fight, and they are separated. They're no longer struggling, so therefore, I'm imagining her looking at him. Imagining a light on, like, you know, it is night, but I imagine there's some sort of light so she can see who it is. Anyways, essentially, okay, it says here, he was at first evasive, but eventually admitted to having killed her. Terrified, this is continuing the quote, Lady Lucan told him she could help him escape if only he would remain at the house for a few days, allowing her injuries to heal. Lucan walked upstairs and sent his daughter to bed, then went into the one of the bedrooms. When Veronica entered to lie on the bed, he told her to put towels down first to avoid staining the bedding. So he's obviously not in, like, a manic craze. He's not viciously trying to kill his wife at this point. And then essentially when he goes to get her some barbiturates because she's in pain or something, and goes into the bathroom to get a towel and the barbiturates, and then that's when she runs, makes her escape, runs to this nearby public house, like a bar called the Plumber's Arms. And that's where she screams out, oh my God, my husband's trying to kill me, blah, 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 he killed the maid. Okay, so let's just lay this out. Like, yeah. And I kind of want to just take a second to say what I just read might not be accurate.
Because that's
this
one
is
version.
This is not from the actual case file. This is just common public domain information. But this is very confusing.
Doesn't add up for me.
It doesn't, right? Because at first you get a struggle where she doesn't know who the attacker is, and then you get a conversation ensuing right after that, so you would automatically assume that she has confirmed the identity of her attacker.
Yeah.
And then why... There were several other opportunities, you would imagine. Him going up stairs. So he essentially goes up the stairs. I missed that part in the quote. But he goes upstairs, puts the daughter to bed, apparently, and then she follows him upstairs. Why wouldn't you run out at that point and go run to the Plumber's Arms and tell people that?
Well, that's one thing. Yeah, totally. And just why... Okay, if this is Lord Lucan and he's hiding, he accidentally kills the maid thinking that it's his wife. He's bludgeoned her with a blunt, with an object that we later find out to be a tire iron or a pipe. Or, yeah, lead pipe or a classic. It was Scarlet in the kitchen with the pipe. Why all of a sudden is it so difficult to subdue yet another, like, not to be sexist, but obviously it's his wife, much smaller, more frail than him. He's a big guy. He was like 6'3", like, you know, not like a pushover, and he's got a lead pipe. He just bludgeoned the maid. How is he all of a sudden struggling so badly with his
with
wife?
With you.
It should have been very easy to just bludgeon you over the head and kill you. And why would he just stop? Oh, you squeezed his nuts, and then he stops and realizes, oh, maybe I need help you to help covering it up?
Yeah.
That is very bizarre.
It doesn't add up. Doesn't add up at all. Her whole story falls apart for me right away, but supposedly she is taken at her word.
Right.
So yeah, like we said, like, first she goes from not knowing who her attacker is and saying that she's only able to confirm via the voice recognition from him telling her to shut up. And then it goes on to a full-on encounter with her ex-husband where he gives up his attack to aid her with her injuries.
Right.
Only for her to run out when it's convenient. And I put huge air quotes there because it's just like, she had much better opportunities to escape. Like, yeah, why would you wait for him to go upstairs, put the daughter to bed, come and address you again, get you barbiturates, get you your towel to wipe off the blood off your face? Like, all this does not make sense to me.
No.
Why would you even go upstairs with him in the first place? Wouldn't you think, like, automatically, oh, well, he's just going to finish off the job, you know? So, again, like, we didn't really allude to the extent of their hatred for one another before this happened.
Right. It was a pretty bitter separation, obviously. With the custody of the children, like most often are.
And she was blaming his, like, you know, his gambling addictions, probably drinking too, I would imagine. Who knows what else is going on? Just the party life, right?
Right.
Doesn't want anything to do with it and is using that against him so she gets custody of the kids.
Yeah.
And so essentially the whole premise of this night is he's been living away from them at a separate location, but he's been attempting to contact them and be a part of their lives. And right 3 days before this night actually occurred, there was an instance where he sent them a kitten as like some sort of like gift. And essentially the kitten was returned to him throat slit on his doorstep by Veronica.
Yeah, so she's batshit crazy.
Yeah, so let's just start with that. And just so everyone is aware that this is the type of person that he is dealing with. Very vengeful.
Yeah, there's two options for this, like how I'm leaning with this story. Like, mm-hmm. And I'll give it at the end too. But it's like, I'm either he was set up or he was justified. Mm-hmm. In him wanting to murder his wife. Mm-hmm. If you see there's this one very bizarre wedding photo from their wedding day, like right after the ceremony. And it could just be like a coincidence, a random one-off snapshot where the expression on her face just happens to be really bizarre. But it's basically like this stone cold, bleak, soulless expression, like as if what she just did was for a greater purpose in the future, or that she just like she
oof, she's just like a sideways soul.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
It's a dark photo. It's weird.
So apologies to everyone because I forgot to premise this whole story of the murder and the night with that slaying of the kitten, because I think that definitely sets up the characters. So yeah. Lord Lucan, maybe not the best. He's not a peach, right? By any means. He's got his issues. And then she has clearly got some other issues there too. So yeah.
And we get a little taster of what he was like after this instance, obviously, like you put down here, from one of the friends at the Claremont Club, mm-hmm. right? George Weiss.
Yeah.
So he opened up just recently about Lucan's sort of demeanor and behavior the night that he was playing backgammon with him at the Claremont Club, sort of right before this all went down. Mm-hmm. He basically described how Lucan appeared to be a little bit more taken aback, reserved that evening, like in deep thought.
Yeah, very quiet.
He had been contemplating something, obviously, mm-hmm. which doesn't really lend his innocence by any means.
No.
But it doesn't necessarily mean he was the one in the house. Mm-hmm. Could have been a hired killer, could have been set up to make it look like it was him. Yeah. Because if this is Veronica...
The wife could have hired someone to set it up to make it look like it was him.
What better way to get back at the husband you hate mm-hmm. than to frame him for murder?
Yeah. You can't come back from that.
No. That is basically the cherry on top of it. Doesn't get better than
that's
that.
That's the ultimate F you.
Pretty much. Right? Knowing that they're just going to rot in jail.
Yeah.
I don't even know. Like, anyway. So
okay. So it even gets juicier, right?
It does.
Because now we have the aftermath. So she's run into the Plumber's Arms, declared she's still covered in blood.
Right.
Declared that her husband's trying to kill her and that he's killed the maid.
And left her children with this savage, like their husband that's just on a massacre rampage. You're not even concerned about that. Like,
that to me again speaks to
great parenting lady.
Evidence of a setup.
Yeah. I'd say.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Not a very good setup either.
Well,
it was good enough to actually get him framed and get him charged with murder, because she actually, if you want to believe it's her setting him up, she goes as far as to plant the murder weapon in the trunk of his car, the same car that's found on the side of the road like hours after he is initially vanished.
Yeah, so basically what happens after this is allegedly there was family friends that claimed that he showed up at the house, at their house, like the same night as this, right? He's distraught, whatever. And he tells them, according to their story, that he showed up at the house, that he witnessed
an altercation happening inside, and he was outside the house.
Right, and that he thought he was being framed. He was fairly certain that Veronica was trying to set him up, so he hightails it out of there, and he mm-hmm. goes, and whether he's doing this to try to have an alibi, or whether he's doing this because he's genuinely needing to talk to somebody about what he just saw, he goes to the neighbor's house to do this, then, shortly after this,
vanishes.
Mm-hmm. They find his car. I can't remember exactly where they find
it. It's a few miles away, like, it's on a roadside somewhere.
And of course, what do they find in the trunk?
The murder weapon. Mm-hmm.
That's a little odd. Like, sure, if you actually genuinely did it and you're trying to run away, you might be thinking, well, I'm already basically caught. I'm on the run. What's the difference if they find the murder weapon in the trunk? But don't you think just in case you would ditch that murder weapon?
Yeah.
That's like the classic Murder, She Wrote thing where it's like, well, we found the gun in the backseat of your car parked in the parked in the parking lot of the police station. It had your name written on the handle and it said, I did it yesterday. Oh, well, it must have been then. Like, you know, like it just seems way too convenient.
Way too convenient. Yeah. Which again, yeah, it makes me think that. Is it that far of a reach for you to go from... Okay, this, what are the signs of a psychopath? Killing of innocent animals? Yes, that's one marker.
Yeah.
I feel like it's not a far reach to go from slaying an innocent kitten, literally slitting its throat and putting it on your ex-husband's doorstep, to murdering a maid. I honestly, I don't want to say, like... But I think there might have been some class... class... conceptions involved in this, where she wouldn't, like, Lady Lucan wouldn't have placed the value of life on the maid as much as her own, you know, right. What I mean, like, where it would have been, she would have looked down on people like that.
I wonder.
I'm not gonna say that that's me conjecturing here, but I feel like it's definitely not a far leap.
No.
Right. I'm just gonna say that because in my mind I really like this thought that we have this, like, 007 James Bond like character that's literally been in hiding for the last, like, 50 years.
We don't know if he's dead or alive.
He's
technically
never...
he could still be alive. He would be in his 80s.
Yeah.
And he, he's, which never is been totally found. Reasonable.
There's been sightings of him all over the world.
Yep. So we're gonna get into that in just a second here. Oh man, I had a thought there. It'll come back to me in a minute. But okay. Well, let's just get into this part. So yeah, is he still out there? The mystery of Lady Lucan and her connection to whether or not she knows actually where he may have ended up. Like,
she would be aware, or do you think the kids might be aware?
Well, this is the thing. It just gets more and more bizarre.
She basically disowned her kids, right?
She that's another interesting part about this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she disowned them after this.
Yeah, happened. Never talked
completely
to them.
Disowned them. She cut them out of the will. She basically squirreled away all the money. I think she ended up donating a whole, like, the majority of her portion of the wealth or whatever. That's a strange relationship with your kids, right?
She's a very strange bird.
Yeah. Some people remain convinced after this happened in the early 70s that Veronica must have had some sort of an idea of where he could have gone. It like, right? If you're believing this one version of the story,
wouldn't
he did
she
it
send
left.
Like assassins after him then or something?
I don't know, right? I mean, she's clearly unstable if we're going down that road, right? So let me just say here, oh goodness, yeah. So so once again with the haunted eyes, there was a interview done with her, and she's basically staring at the camera with literally, like, this is, I can't remember exactly where this is from, but literally the quote was like, eyes that seemed haunted with the knowledge of something, clearly, either haunted with the fact that she had attempted to frame her husband for murder, or still haunted by the fact that her husband almost killed her.
Yeah. Either way.
Clearly something
going on
here.
And obviously haunted if it's the first scenario that she killed a person.
Right. He had been twice declared legally dead.
Yeah.
But the police have now revealed that they believe that he's actually, there's a chance that he's still alive, that he's been reportedly spotted literally hundreds of times, like you just said, okay?
And the only reason he was ever declared dead in the first place was because of inheritance factors and the passing on of his title as Lord Lucan.
Yes. Yeah.
That was the only reason why he's declared dead.
That's it.
There's no other reason to support the fact that he would have either killed himself. Because that's one possibility, right? That he tried to murder his wife, ends up killing the maid, and makes a big mess of everything, and ends up murdering himself. Killing himself. Murdering. Self-murder.
Murdered.
Still a form of murder. So that to me does not fit his personality, any of it. But people do suggest that too. But there was no evidence of a body ever found. There was none of that.
No.
And, yeah.
Yeah. So he's been reported to be seen everywhere from the U.S. to Zimbabwe.
And New Zealand, that was funny, right? In 1974, he was reported to be living in a model Land Rover with his pet Snowy the cat, Camilla the goat, and Redfern the possum.
Yeah, so there's lots of, obviously, rumors abound about, the most likely one, though, I feel like, is this, that there's some who believe that Lord Lucan actually made his way to Africa, where the family did actually have some assets.
Mm-hmm.
They had assets around other places in the world, too.
Sorry, South Africa?
In South Africa.
Oh, okay.
Until at least the year 2000, or possibly later. He's been declared dead in absentia at this point now, obviously.
Right.
But there's some that claim his family, like you said a minute ago too, the kids might mm-hmm. actually know his whereabouts, and possibly have in the past actually visited him. So the eldest son, I can't actually remember the name of the eldest son. There's reports that he literally flew out to South Africa in this wherever remote, I don't know, there's no details on where exactly in South Africa, but that he wouldn't ever actually have physical contact with his father again, but basically be brought to a place where they could acknowledge that he was still alive.
That's interesting.
And if you believe that story, obviously the son doesn't believe he tried to kill the mother. Either that or they all hated her.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why he spent every night at the Claremont Club, because she was certifiably nuts.
It's the classic, right? The husband going out to play six hours of golf just to get some some space.
I mean, it's not...
gain your...
I don't want to sound like I'm just siding with the guy who potentially is a murderer, but the photos of her are very strange. It looks like she has no soul.
There's a lot of inconsistencies in her story. There's a lot of strange behaviors before and after the fact of all of this happening in years where she basically, yeah, like we said, she cut out her kids entirely. She cut out the whole family. Was she just so haunted by this relationship and this past that she just couldn't even face it? That to me, I don't even know. I feel like there's a lot more going on there. And it just is the classic case of a super corrupted, opulent, rich, wealthy family that has the means, right? Like Lord Lucan, out of anyone else that would be in this situation, he would have the means to escape and get out of the country when he needed to.
True.
And to maintain his way of life.
It's
very interesting too, because this whole gambling aspect is very crucial too, because he could have squirreled away quite a bit of money, right? Like that she didn't know about, and then squirreled it away and kept it in a safe place so that when he does make it, when he vanishes, that's, he can just use that to live off of essentially, and doesn't have to rely on any of the actual legitimate titles and trust funds and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I love this story. It's not what we typically cover on the podcast. There's not really a paranormal element to it. There is history, and we love history, so that's why we're covering it.
Definitely.
And it's legit, man. He is the most notorious missing person that you will never find.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we still might. Who knows? Maybe we'll find his body somewhere or something like that, right? I think I should just end it off by saying that Lady Lucan just recently passed away, and she lived out her remaining days, like we said, no contact with the family, but she passed away in the same house, same bed, that was the guest home that Lord Lucan was living in the entire time that they were separated.
Oh, weird.
Which is just a sort of bizarre thing. She has this morbid, weird connection. Why would you want... Why wouldn't you sell that and live in a condo or something? Like, she's strange. Why? She's hated this man. She's
hanging on to it. Hanging on to it. That's weird. There's ghosts in her closet. There's lots of skeletons, I think.
Definitely.
She kind of reminds me, actually, of the character of the sister in Taboo.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Just that weird sort of layer of darkness.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's the mystery. That's the mini-sode for this month. And we hope you guys enjoyed it. Get at us with your own personal theories. What do you think? Who done it?
Yeah.
Lady Lucan, Lord Lucan, another third party, potentially. Who knows? Maybe it was the kitten. No, I'm kidding.
That's why it's got its throat. Yeah, no, we definitely want to hear from you guys. So you can post on the, I think there's like, we can have a little chat going on Patreon too, but wherever you guys want to get at us, you guys know where to find us and know how to get at us. So yeah, we hope you enjoyed this, and we will have another one coming at you next month.
Mm-hmm.
Stay tuned. This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.